Hello, Internet! Welcome to episode 146 of the Assorted Calibers podcast. The Second Amendment podcast is a little bit for everyone. I'm Weirdbeard, and with me, as always, is my lovely hostess, Aaron Paulette. How are you doing, Aaron?
I am contractually obligated to say I'm fine, and how are you, Weird?
Yeah, I've heard you're going through a bit of a rough week, and I will not force you to talk about it any further.
Yeah, well, it's more than a week, and I'm not going to go into details, but I don't know, I think I maybe talked about this before. It's just more of the same of my father, who has Parkinson's, and now we've confirmed he's got dementia, and we're going through all the paperwork to get him into a home, and it's just, it's wearying.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, so much paperwork. And you know, stress and things like that. And
Well, I can understand that. And so, of course, under loads of stress, I could ask, how you sleeping under your CPAP? But generally, under these conditions, your sleep is going to be
sugar.
No matter what your
feelings are. That is true. My sleep is not great. But I am getting better. I still haven't mastered getting all the way through the night, but I get to about the time you start waking up, and then for whatever reason, it's like, I don't know, I need to sneeze, I need to blow my nose, one of my nostrils has closed up due to my allergies, my nose is itchy and I need to scratch it, or maybe I just need to take a drink of water or something, and it's impossible to drink with that thing, and so I take it off, and then, you know, just I'm groggy, and it's just like, I don't want to deal with putting this thing back on. Mm-hmm. But I'm getting better. I want to say that I'm between 4 and 6 hours with it on, and I'm getting used to it. And so, you know, it should be just a matter of time before I'm sleeping through the night with it. It's awkward. I wouldn't wish it on you. At one point when I was talking about it, I started to say, well, I certainly wouldn't choose it, but I did choose it because I chose that over sleep apnea. Yeah. So, yeah. But yeah, I mean, it's not like, oh, everything in my life sucks. It's just I'm dealing with a lot, and the stress in the house is very, very thick, and we're just getting by day, step by step. So cheer me up, Weird. Give me some good news. How are things doing with you and your daughter?
Well, I will give you some good news is that the state of Massachusetts, while it's Massachusetts, we do everything wrong. The governor has released an edict that now all of a sudden any sort of hybrid learning, that would be what my daughter's currently going through. She did a segment on it where she does she's in the morning cohort, so she goes to school first thing in the morning and then gets released a little bit before lunchtime, and then after lunch she does essentially does either just homework assignments essentially on a tablet, and does a Zoom call with another teacher, and meanwhile the afternoon kids are going in there, and that was designed so that it splits each class up in half, so they'll have a little bit more space in the classroom, and they don't have to worry about feeding them a meal, which was a big conundrum at the beginning of COVID. But now it has been declared that the kids are to go back in, and any sort of hybrid learning will not count. And so therefore, if your child continues to do, or your school system continues to do hybrid learning, I don't know what they can do to enforce it, but essentially they're demanding that all schools go back full time on April 5th. And it's, you know, overhanded. Our school board wrote a letter to the superintendent of schools, essentially saying, like, all right, this would be fine if you guys were helping us at the beginning of all this, but pretty much the school said, yeah, figure it out, do what works for you. And they're like, we don't know. There's never been a global pandemic like this, and we've never done this before. Like, a little bit of help would be nice, and they got nothing. And now, all of a sudden, now that they've figured it all out and they've got a good groove going, now it's all right, you gotta change stuff around, and it's going to be for like one more month. But the good news is my daughter will be going back to full-time school, so that will mean that I am not going to be constantly running back and forth to the school and constantly running up and down the stairs to say, all right, how are we doing? Are you taking care of your stuff? Do you need a snack? Do you need a break? It's so exhausting. Like, my daughter was away this weekend, and it's amazing at how like much of a day she can eat up, not even doing anything particularly bad. It's just, there's just so much extra stuff that's just a massive time sink on my day. And that will be coming to an end, and I'm so looking forward to it.
So when you say that whoever it was said that school doesn't count, mm-hmm. I assume they mean past this date of, yes. I guess, April 1st. It's not like what your daughter's been doing for the past 3, 6, 9 months. That hasn't been marked invalid. It seems obvious, but this is state level government we're talking about. I just always assume the worst.
Yeah, take nothing for granted. No, yeah, they are just saying that essentially if a school decides to continue doing something that they've chosen for the curriculum as opposed to the state mandated curriculum, they'll probably be held delinquent or whatever schools can do to censure a school that's not performing its duties. And so, yeah, so school's gonna be starting full time again for a little bit. So that will, mm-hmm. I'm a little grumpy about how it went down, because it's just, come on, guys, this just doesn't make any sense on how you're doing it. But at this and for such a short period of time, it's going to be super disruptive. I think my daughter is going to be just fine, but there's going to be a bunch of kids that are just going to be like, hey, look, new friends, new different people. It's a different situation. It's all that. I don't want to learn. And then you're going to get into the weather's good. I don't want to be inside.
Yeah, it does seem strange to do it when you are very close to the end of the school year. I mean, not super close, but you've got like 2 months, I think. Mm-hmm. I think here in Florida, I don't remember when schools let out, but we let out sometime in June. So it might be 2.5 months. Yeah. Again, I never trust government, state, local, federal to do the smart thing.
Yeah. One of the conspiracies I've heard, and of course also, but that's one of the big things with all that's been going on with COVID and all that stuff, is nobody talks about why. They just say what to do, what not to do, what's safe, what's not. They never talk about why. They never explain anything. And so you just like, all right, is this legit? Is this intelligent? Is this incompetent? Is this nefarious? I don't know. But one of the conspiracies is that it's because the Massachusetts, it's to get the kids into school long enough to get them into the Massachusetts standardized testing system, which was, I believe, suspended last year. But yeah, so I don't know. I don't know the full story behind it, but either way, I am going to look at the silver lining in that cloud that my daughter is going to be going full time at school, which she is going to love, because it is, even now, she's gotten into a good groove, but boy, it is a really, really tough sell to, we get out of school, she's got a friend that lives like on the way home from school who's got like a play fort in his backyard, and the two of them, they play in the play fort for about, you know, a half an hour. Then we walk home and it's lunchtime, and then it's one of those, okay, back to schoolwork at your house. Like, She's an elementary school student. She's like how all of us remember our elementary school years. When you get home, you're free. And then I'm like, all right, cracking the whip, back to work. And again, that's another one of the time sinks, is the, you know, not only do I drop her off, come home, get just a couple hours to get some work done, and then I have to go right back to the school. But also it's the, I got to be cracking the whip, because she both she'd rather play. And then two, she's a small kid, so she's got like no time management. So it's one of those like, no. If I'm not there to crack the whip and say, you got to keep going, got to do more work, it's not going to get done in time. And we're going to have a very unhappy evening. So it will be much better. Plus also my daughter is very much on the, No, the teacher could tell me what to do. That's awesome. But no, you're my dad. You're my dad. You telling me to do schoolwork, you know, is not going to work.
Okay, then.
So yeah, that's going to be a change for the better. And I'm registered for my Rona shot. I'm I, I've I don't know when Massachusetts is going to be available for that. They gave me a whole sheet and they including like risk factors, and I have asthma, but they were like, it needs to be considered moderate to severe asthma. And I'm like, yeah, under no circumstance. I use my inhaler like one, like two or three times a year and stuff like that. So it's, I don't have any of the risk factors that they are looking for in this. So we'll see when I get the jab, as the British people say. So that's my life.
Okay, then. So I was griping about stupid government, and I see main topic. We've got stupid government doing stupid government tricks in the stupidest of bureaus, that of alcohol, tobacco, and firearms.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, should be a convenience store, not a government agency. Yeah, this is something that I picked up on like a week ago, and I was thinking about talking about it on the show last week, but we had a ton of content. The show ran a little long, so I said, we'll save it for this week. But ATF raided a group called AutoKeyCards.com, and they're like a novelty site. They sell these like credit card, I think they're credit card sized.
We'll go with wallet sized.
Yeah, they sell these little wallet sized, and they're steel cards, and they have printed on them. This is not etched. This is not cut out. This is not anything like that. It is literally, they're just like, you know, they are just printed on them.
A drawing on a piece of metal.
Correct. Drawn on them, outlines of what could be a lightning link if it was cut out. And
for our listeners who don't know what that is something you drop in to make a semi-automatic AR-15 into a select fire weapon.
Correct. As in our Phoenix episode that we did live from the GRPC in Phoenix, we had our friend Wally on, and he's a full auto collector, and he referred to the lightning link as an $8 piece with a $3,000 legal assurance, in the fact if you were going to get a registered one. But essentially they got raided, and the ATF is now declaring that that those cards are in fact machine guns, which, I mean, how we got down this rabbit hole in the first place, where like suppressors are NFA items. They're not guns. You can't shoot anybody with a suppressor. I could leave a suppressor on my coffee table and not even tell my daughter what it is. And the only thing I would worry about is my daughter breaking it. And of course, also I pointed out that we've got bump stocks are illegal. And in case you didn't see it, I linked on my blog a video from the Gun Collective where they used a high speed camera. I don't know which one, but they used one of the super duper duper high speed cameras to videotape Adam Kraut shooting an AR-15 with a bump stock. And you can clearly see that the trigger is fully resetting. His finger is going off of the trigger, and then he is initiating another trigger pull on all of that. And that was designed to be used as evidence in favor against a bump stock ban, for all the good that did. But yeah, so this is just lunacy. Is so now a printed piece of metal that is not anything that can be used as an auto drop in auto sear whatsoever, unless you physically cut it out, of which case, how much further are we from saying that just a piece of metal is a machine gun?
Well, I mean, there would really be nothing stopping you from printing out the lightning link schematic, mm-hmm, to scale, taping it to the piece of metal, and then using that as a template.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I mean, it's
so are pieces of metal now machine guns? Are printed out designs on paper machine guns?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't even have the energy to rant about how much I hate this, because it's the ATF. They make dumb decisions all the time. It is their reason for existence.
Yeah.
I swear to God, weird. If there was a president whose only platform was, I will abolish the ATF. Okay, maybe if he was Satan himself, I might not vote for him. But otherwise, you've got my vote.
Yeah. Oh, God. Especially since, oh, man, I'm looking at, I've got a rack of wine behind me, and I'm not that much of a wine drinker, but my buddy makes this stuff and it's good. I enjoy it, but I'm more of a liquor drinker, but he makes this wine for me. And it's one of those, like, I would be so excited with this if I could pour this wine into a still and make brandy out of it and mess around with that. Like, that is something that I would be so entertained to do, but I can't do that because it's illegal, because prohibition still kind of exists in the United States. We just changed the rules a little teeny tiny bit. And yeah, and so abolishing the ATF, it would make me so happy on so many levels. And just before I go, the one final thing that I just put in on the, it was after the Adam Kraut shooting the bump stock, and you can clearly see that he is pulling the trigger for every single round that is being fired by that bump stock. He's just doing it very quickly. I posted a video. There's several of these, but this is one of the more clear ones. Is a very young, willowy woman who was given a, I assume, fully loaded 500 Magnum revolver. And there is a phenomenon that happens with heavy recoiling revolvers, double action revolvers, which is that when you pull the trigger, the recoil can be so strong that the gun will compress and rotate in your hand enough that it will physically pull your finger away from the trigger enough to reset it. But you still think you're following through. So you are still squeezing, and you've been squeezing the whole time. It's just overcome the power of your hand. And because of that, it will fire twice as all the times I've seen it. I haven't seen if it'll do it more than once, probably because it's the second one's like straight up in the air. It's super scary.
Yeah, I think I've seen the video, and if it had done it a third time, there was a gentleman off to her left who would have been dead.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. That's like a saying that I heard someone say on the, yeah, if the disconnector on your 1911 breaks while you're shooting, the third shot will go up your nose. You know, it'll twist around in your hand. But yeah, literally this woman shoots a 500 Magnum pistol. Looks like it's a Smith & Wesson. And it touches off once. And as it's recoiling in her hand, she touches off another one pretty much straight up in the air. And they are baffled at what happens. And yeah, people have done some research on why this phenomenon happens. But it's one of those, that's bump firing. That is what bump firing is. And so clearly that revolver, that manual action gun.
That revolver is a machine gun.
According to this logic, of which ATF has none.
So that sounds like a really easy pivot, because I know we got something else that deals with not logic.
Yes. This is a story of a PolitiFact, and it's also kind of just a caution on these fact-checking groups out there, because so many of them are like so heavily biased. They're citing Collier Noir said in they're stating this is in a Facebook post, but essentially he said this everywhere. 90% of Americans do not support universal background checks. And he says that because it's true. That is something that I say all the time as well. We always hear the anti-gunners talking about huge percentage of Americans and huge percentage of American gun owners do not support universal background checks. And they cite all of these various polls. And interestingly enough, they point out that there's several polls where it is actually in the mid to high 80% that the polls cite. So even low, there's 83% is one of the lower numbers, 83, 82.
Yeah, but that support is usually when the question is phrased in a very vague manner.
Yep.
Something like, well, hey, would you support background checks to prevent criminals from getting guns or something like that?
Yep.
But when you start getting into the specifics of the how and the why, there are a lot of people who go, hey, wait a minute, I don't like the way that sounds. And the support decreases as things become more specific.
Yeah. But needless to say, I'm saying that they are in this super duper anal a statement of saying that, like, Colleen Noir is false for saying that 90% of Americans do not support guns. And they, in their evidence, they show that 90% of Americans do not support guns, because there's a whole bunch of polls that show it in the low 80%, even with their polls that are likely cherry picked. And as I always say in my Weird Audio Fisks, as the crowning achievement of that, if this was true, there have been background check laws that have been presented to voters, and it's about a 50-50 chance if they pass, as far as it goes. I can't remember off the top of my head how many have physically gone through and how many have passed and how many have failed. And the most I think that has ever got it was when Washington State got it, and I think it was like 12%. It was a 12% margin. So it was like 62% of the voters voted in favor of this background check bill. And if in fact it was 90% of the people of Washington that voted, the idea that the other 10% was voted at 100% and they voted at, I don't know, I can't even do the math on I just created a hard math problem for myself. So I'm going to immediately stop doing what I'm doing. But the idea to make it so that 90% was true, or even 80% was true, and the end result was 62% in a state that is a deep blue state and has been passing all sorts of ridiculous gun control laws in the last few years. And then meanwhile, like Las Vegas in Nevada, it passed with, like, I think it was like 1,000 votes. And of course, also the law was so poorly written that the attorney general said, yeah, no, it's moot. It was written so badly that I would have to rewrite it to make it so that it would actually affect the people of Nevada. Cause essentially it made it illegal for any gun transaction that does not directly contact the FBI NICS system. And Nevada, it's illegal to contact the NICS system because Nevada has its own background check system, much like Florida and Tennessee and a few other states. So that he just said, look, I'm not going to make it so that it fits on that, because it very specifically is calling for violation of the law. And so, no, I'm just going to say it's moot. And they have not touched it since. That was like, I don't know how long ago that was. That was several years ago, though. I think that was back when, like, Obama was president. And so, again, if in fact the background checks were as popular as they were, they wouldn't be going down in referendum questions, and they certainly would be, when they passed, would be passing much higher than, you know, the, you know, few percentage points that they get.
So the much easier way to say this is that if they had 90% support, they would have passed in every single state.
Correct.
Yeah. Correct. And they haven't. So that's how you know it's garbage.
Yeah. Or it's not, the numbers are just not representative. As you're saying, I am not going to say that these polls are complete crap. I am going to say that these polls are not representative. So the questions that they are asking are not questions that reflect the actual political movement that's going on. Because when it turns from, do you support background checks? Because I support background checks. I actually would not mind a system where I could log into the NICS system and run a background check on somebody and let them run a background check on me. And we both get green lights, and then we can exchange as many guns as we want, because we both know that we're both upstanding American citizens, and we have every right to own those firearms. So have at it, boys. It's bad when suddenly it's one of those, why am I running a background check on my gun? The Glock that I'm trying to sell, the revolver that I'm trying to sell, the AR-15 that I'm trying to sell is neither good nor bad. And it's not like the NICS check is going to say, oh, that gun was illegally manufactured, or that gun was, it doesn't check on any of that. It'd be interesting if you could check to see if the gun was stolen or has any sort of fraudulent, you know, business behind it. But if they're not doing that, it's literally just so that, okay, this person ran a background check. What were they doing? Were they exchanging some guns? It's a registry. And I'm opposed to that.
Well, I seem to recall that sometime within the past 10 years, the option was floated whereby someone could call in to the NICS, mm-hmm, and get a go, no go. and the Democrats in Congress just killed it because that was way more freedom than they wanted us to have.
Yep,
because exactly. What they wanted was a backdoor gun registry and not an actual background check.
Yep, and several of the anti-gun lobbying groups wrote hit pieces on this bill. And so it's one of those, like, this is universal background checks. It's just universal background checks that cannot be used for a registration because the guns aren't involved. It is literally just background checking the people, and it's also making it so that you don't have to go into gun shops and fill out a 4473. And so it's one of those, like, why would you be opposed to this unless your motives were something other than background checks for all guns?
Would you consent to having an embedded RFID chip that told people that you are a safe and background checked person?
Oh, like on my person?
Yeah, yes, injected under your dermis like we do with dogs. Hmm. And of course, you know, RFID doesn't work like it does in the movies. You can't track people across city blocks. It is like within a couple of feet. And it would be, you know, you would go to the gun store or other places and, you know, you'd swipe a wand, it would go beep, and it would register either green or red. And I know this is just sort of out of nowhere, but I'm trying to figure out, if you had that sort of course, I don't know how we would change it in case someone violates it. But what I'm getting at is, would you, Weird Beard, be comfortable with having something injected into your body, a something that would be difficult to remove, if it would make it a lot easier for you to get a gun?
I'm not going to say hard pass on that, but I would actually argue that one thing that I always think that should be done is, rather than something as cool and sci-fi as that, is simply, we have a system where nowadays, I don't know if you've seen this, Aaron, but oftentimes minors, when they get their driver's license, it is printed differently than specifically someone who is above the age of 21.
Oh, yes. Oh, I know that very well. If you're under 18 or no, it's under 21 because it has to do with alcohol. Mm-hmm. If you are under 21, then your driver's license information is printed portrait, as opposed to if you're over 21, in which case it's printed landscape. Mm-hmm. And I discovered that when I was on a date. And that was a case of, oh, crap, how young are you?
Aaron, you cradle robber.
I swear to God, I did not know, and this was a rare instance of her asking me out, and so, of course, yes. And I had to take her to, like, the DMV. I didn't have to, but she asked, and I did, because she had to pay, I don't know if she had to pay a ticket, pay a fine, pay whatever, and she pulled her driver's license out, and it was like, I've never seen one with that orientation. And I'm looking around because I'm at the DMV, and then they're explaining in the big poster what that means. And I'm going, oh,
stuff.
I hope I'm not on a date with a 16-year-old. And I wasn't. Fortunately, she was of legal age, but this was very close to 20 years ago. I do not remember if she was 18 or 19 or 20. But at that point, I was like in my late 20s. And it was just like, oh my God, am I actually 10 years older than you are? It was very sort of sobering. And so, okay, that's definitely going to change the tenor of the evening.
Actually, it reminds me of a story I was telling my wife about. This one was, there was actually a girl, thankfully there was no romantic component to this whatsoever, but the scariness of it ties in, is I was hanging out at a convention after party one evening, and I was talking with this girl, and I use the term girl literally, but it was a young what I thought was a young woman, and she was just smart as a whip. Like, so we were really having some interesting conversations and all that. And it was only later that I found out that she was like 14 or 15 years old. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Just cause it was one of those. Yeah. Yeah. Just, I didn't, she didn't look I mean, she looked young, but she didn't look that young. I probably would have carted her for a beer, but I would not have carted her for cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And this is, of course, back in the day when you could buy cigarettes when you're 18. I think most places you can, but not Massachusetts. But it was just one of those, like, oh boy, how young are you? Oh my goodness, I'm glad this wasn't a romantic turn. But I would be all in favor of printing driver's licenses or any sort of official state ID a different way. The way that I see it the best is like a scarlet F, the scarlet letter, just for dramaticism. But it doesn't have to be as stigmatizing as that. But the when you are convicted of a felon or involuntarily committed or something where you are going to have your rights stripped, and of course there's more to it. You often lose voting rights, and there are some other things going on. And also these are things where if an employer runs a background check, they very well may reject your application because you have proven yourself to be untrustworthy in the past. And so you would suddenly have your driver's license printed in a different way now that you are someone who couldn't carry a gun. And that would solve, as far as the Second Amendment issues go, it would solve the background check. I would like to see some ID. That's what happens at every private sale, because you want to make sure that the person's a resident of your state. Obviously, that crap needs to go. But for the time being, you cannot do interstate commerce with a firearm unless you are an FFL. And so you check to make sure they're part of your state, but you can also look and see if they are a felon. Also, that would work very well with constitutional carry for that added thing of the, how do I know the person is legally carrying that gun? Well, you ask for their ID. If the ID does not have the scarlet letter in it, that's their concealed carry permit.
Okay, cool. I like that.
And then furthermore, I mean, obviously there's the added a benefit of the, oh, the neighbor's kid wants to babysit my child. Well, you know what? You seem all right. Hey, can I just see your ID just for tax purposes? And you just have a quick look and, yeah, cool. You haven't been convicted of any serious crimes. Congratulations. You're free. Or someone's doing work for you or all that. You can just have a quick peek at their ID. But the big thing that I have is that the amount of just complete nonsense that we lose our rights for in this country now. I mean, when you read old law books and all that, felonies were like serious, like life in prison, execution style crimes. And it has since gone that more and more things are falling into the felony bucket as far as convictions go. Mm-hmm. And I think it greatly needs to be reformed for all of the things, you know, not just Second Amendment, but also things like voting rights and are you allowed to hold down a job? Will an employer reject you because of that? I think that just needs to be greatly informed. And if it is much more dramatic on the, a lot of times, like I said, I know several people who did a plea bargain for drug possession back when they were in college. Several of my classmates just like quickly made it go away. That was their goal. They went into court and they wanted it to go away so that they didn't do any jail time and they didn't have a lengthy court battle. And I'm pretty sure almost all of them pled to felony possession and the court was fine with that. They paid a fine. They had to do some community service and that's that. But if these people are buying guns right now, they're quickly finding that the shops aren't gonna process their application because that's a felony and that's forever. That one joint you got caught with back in 1992 is still with you today. And I think that would wake some people up when they suddenly realize, no, it didn't just go away. This is now you. Congratulations, you just walked into Foreverland.
I should know better, really. I ask you a simple question and I get like a 10 to 15 minute response.
And you never will.
Probably not. So, continuing our theme of idiocy and the government, let's go to politics. Now, in my opinion, politics is filth, and I would rather work with raw sewage because at least that's honest. David agrees, at least in part, and he explains why politics is not a subject suitable for the firearms classroom.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. A post I saw online recently brought one of my main concerns as an instructor into sharp relief. politics in the classroom, specifically the firearms training environment. So in this segment, I'd like to address why I think that's a bad idea. Politics has always affected our everyday life. However, in recent years, it seems to have infected everything we do, see, and hear. When acting in my capacity as firearms instructor, my job is to teach safe and responsible gun ownership. I'm not there to push either a left or right political agenda. As much as I possibly can, I try to leave politics out of the classroom. I generally don't know the political leanings of my students, and they don't need to know mine. In my opinion, we as instructors should solely be there for the transfer of technical firearm education. If a student asks me about any upcoming firearm legislation, I try to explain it in as nonpartisan a way as possible. Again, I'm there to teach them safe and responsible firearm usage, not get out the vote or stump for a political party. If they ask my political opinion on some topic, I request they ask me outside of class time. Once I'm off the clock, I feel less constrained. I've heard other instructors say things like, "The Democratic Party at the top levels has embraced gun control as one of their signature issues." Or, "I have no problem pointing out the politicians who are trying to make it difficult or impossible for people to protect themselves." That's not what my students are there for. They come to class to learn about the technical aspect of firearms, not be told of the evils of the Democrat Party, or about the latest proposed gun control bill. Save that for other events. Of course, I cover current state and federal laws as they pertain to firearm ownership and use. However, I don't discuss the party or politicians who introduced, pushed through, or signed that legislation into law. That's A, not my job, and B, not where my expertise lies. By taking political sides, or even appearing to take political sides, in the classroom, I'm going to alienate a certain proportion of my students. That benefits no one. Demonizing a party or individual politicians in the training environment does nothing more than cause bad feelings. If some students feel you're attacking the team they more closely align with, they tend to shut down and stop learning. I've seen it happen in other instructors' classrooms. I don't want it happening in mine. If you're a regular listener, you've heard some of Weird's interviews with Lara Smith of Liberal Gun Club. How do you think an instructor with a clear right-leaning political bias would affect her learning? Or Sarah Kate Hauptman and her husband John from the Guns Guide to Liberals podcast? These are our dear friends and allies in the fight against gun control. We should not make them feel unwelcome or attacked. As I've mentioned in other segments, I grew up in New York City and lived near Albany, New York for about 30 years. I've seen and been personally affected by a large number of pretty much the worst anti-gun laws proposed and passed in this country so far. I have very strong feelings about the importance of the Second Amendment and those who would attack this essential human right. Supporting the Second Amendment used to be a bipartisan issue at one time. I'd like to see us get back to that. In closing, there's a time and place for everything. I would no more explain proper stance, grip, and sight picture at a political rally than I would extol or demonize a politician or party in the classroom. I hope most instructors are on the same page, although I know some are not.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, in the name of all that's holy weird, do the bloody thing!
That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me or suggestions for future segments or a comment on a past segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers Podcast Facebook page, and Aaron or Weird will make sure I get them. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David, and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
Yeah, it's not just in the classroom. Again, I do a lot of public speaking about, you know, firearms rights, and rights to a certain extent do involve politics. But in order to keep my appeal as broad as possible, I do have to police my tone so as to not alienate potential allies.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that I have been instructed, and it's a good instruction, is that I should stop using the word anti-gun or anti-right, and instead use the term gun prohibitionist.
Mm.
Because, first of all, it's less alienating. And secondly, well, even though we do have elements of prohibition to this day, in the public consciousness, prohibition is seen as something which has been tried and failed and is stupid and relegated to the dustbin of history. And so when you call someone a gun prohibitionist, you are throwing some nice historical shade on them, which is not quite as insulting as calling them anti-gun or anti-right, but I think has the same or better effect.
Mm. Yeah, that's actually a really, I may have to start doing that. That is actually a really, really good term. And I could definitely just, I could hear the difference just listening to you say it, like, oh yeah, no, that does work well. And again, yeah, Prohibition. It was a very violent and dangerous time. Al Capone got his power because of Prohibition. And his name says it all. And also, I wanted just to say, being big tent on the gun issues doesn't mean you have to get along with everybody. You have to agree with everything that they have. I mean, heck, we know those of us who are deep in the gun stuff, there are people in that are pro gun and of the more traditional politics who we don't agree with, who we don't get along with. I mean, the NRA is a great example. There's a whole lot of infighting going on within the NRA and within gun owners and their opinions on the NRA. And so we don't all have to, this is not a surrender of everything. You are not surrendering your politics. I just say, let's make gun ownership nonpartisan again and make it so that now it's just universal that people are agreeing to carry guns and it's not along political lines. And we don't have to worry about, like right now they're talking about all the different gun control bills that are going through the House, and they're looking at the party line split, and you know, and it's all talking about the Democrats overall are pledging their support for this, and the Republicans overall are opposed to it, though there might be a few that are going to split, you know, break ranks. And it should be all just the question of the person from California, maybe they're in favor of more gun control. They might be a Republican, they might be a Democrat. But let's just try to get the politics. Guns should be apolitical, and they are very apolitical. They fit with any political ideology. And once we do that, we can argue about other stuff. We can actually get some work done. There's no point. People pass gun control, violent crime goes up. People's choices and freedoms and ability to defend themselves goes down. Why would you want that? Let's make that nonpartisan. Even if you're a liberal Democrat, if you're a Christian conservative Republican, if you're a libertarian, if you're an unenrolled, if you don't like any of that stuff, all of that's in your favor. This is just as much benefit to the people who I don't agree with politically as the people who I do. Let's just take it off the table. So, shifting gears a little bit away from government and politics, let's talk a little bit about the gun industry. Matt from Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns is on the warpath on the marketing of the latest Micro Nines to hit the market.
Hi guys, Matt with Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns here. Just a little thing I should probably bring out and point out to everybody, because the gun industry went full hog on it this week. Deceptive marketing. We have a really, really interesting case here where 3 years ago, Sig came out with the P365, held 10 rounds plus one in the chamber, making it the clown car gun, held the most. About a year ago, Springfield came out with the Hellcat, held 11 in the flush fit mag, plus one in the chamber. Okay, that's new. Then you had 365 XL come out right around that same time, which extended the grip slightly for a flush fit 12 plus one. Okay, it does have a longer grip than the Hellcat, but I will give it as an accurate marketing. This week, both Smith & Wesson and Ruger decided to come out with their competitors. Congratulations, guys. 3 years later, you finally made it. I understand it takes development time. What I don't get is your marketing choices. Sorry, no. The Ruger Max 9 is not the 12 plus 1 gun that you say it is. That is the 12 plus 1 with the extended magazine. Flush fit is 10 plus 1. Yet, everywhere, they lead. It's a 12 plus 1 handgun. 12 plus 1, 12 plus 1, 12 plus 1. Smith & Wesson, 13 plus 1 for the M&P Shield Plus. But that's not with a flush fit mag. It's, again, 10 plus 1 with a flush fit mag. If I'm going to go with an extended mag, I can definitely go and go, this Glock 26 here is a 50 plus one because you can slap a 50 round drum in it. Or the SIG P365 or the XL can be set as 15 plus ones because you can from the factory get a 15 round extended mag. But that is not an accurate expectation of what the gun is. And honestly, I wish they just led with, hey, we're 10 plus one. And actually gone with, and we have extended capacities to give us X and Y, like everybody else did. The Hellcat came out, if I remember right, it was 13 plus 1. Okay, that's for the extended mag. I'm perfectly fine with that, but not to come forward with your marketing wrong. Well, not wrong, but dishonestly. And unfortunately, people are just going for it. People aren't paying attention to notice, oh wait, y'all lying on your actual capacity. The flush fit mag is really what you want for concealed carry. I mean, I got a 365 XL, and I'm changing out the grip to make the grip a little bit shorter because I feel that conceals slightly better for me. But that is a personal preference. But why can't we have it honest? And for you who don't live in free states, well, several states have a 10-round mag capacity limit. So it makes sense to have the gun be a 10 plus 1. And from what I'm hearing, the M&P Shield Plus is basically the same size as the shield, except a little bit wider. Well, if that's the case, that makes it bigger than the 365. So bigger and holds the same amount of rounds with a flush fit mag, and it's bigger. Yeah, there's a slight problem there. Just please pay attention, people. I figured this has got me a little incensed, and I didn't want everybody else to be going around going, wait, why is this gun not this? And it's deceptive marketing, and it needs to be called out if we're ever going to have actual good marketing. Because these are solid pistols. The Smith & Wesson one is overpriced out the wazoo, because if you want it optics ready, you're going to have to buy it from Performance Center, and they're talking like $900-plus MSRP. Where at least with the Ruger Max 9, all of them come factory for the MSRP of $500, well, $499, with an optics cut. So you don't have an optics with it, but you're straight from the factory. You don't have to do any milling. You don't have to do anything, where the Shield Plus doesn't have any of that. And it's got the higher MSRP. Just a couple of thoughts for you. Thanks for listening.
I'm pleased to report that I indeed own a 50 plus one Glock 26.
It's great. The 50 round drum in the and it's in your Glock 26, which it's gonna look so adorable.
I have found that even though I do get strange looks when I take it to the range, the counterweight of the drum, while it is heavy in my arms, it mitigates the recoil mm-hmm. a fair bit. So I get steadier shots. Hooray!
Yeah, this is the one I was thinking about, the Ruger Max 9, which, by the way, looks like a wonderful pistol. I mean, these all are great guns. Yeah, they refer to providing a capacity of up to 12 plus one rounds. That's like the prices starting at. It's if it says you're going to get it for $100, don't worry, you'll be spending $200 before you're done. They need to do a better job of it. I mean, I will say right off the bat, I absolutely applaud them for launching these guns with extended magazines, because especially if you're carrying a pistol for self-defense, overall the magazine that you're carrying in the gun is you want to have the smaller one possible for easier concealment, though sometimes you might be able to get away with it depending on your concealment method. But carrying a reload, boy, you can carry some really, really big magazines on your person before they start getting cumbersome or ridiculous. I always, when I was carrying my car PM45, I always carried at least seven. It was a 5-round magazine in it, because it's a 45. But I would always carry a 7-round magazine, and I wish that they made bigger ones. Now that gun's been replaced by my SIG P36. P365, and unfortunately I live in Massachusetts, but if I did not, I would absolutely carry one of the 15 rounders for that gun as a reload, because why wouldn't you? And actually, honestly speaking, a 15 round magazine would be easier to reload, because if you're carrying it in a pocket, it's going to be closer to the top of your pocket when you're carrying, versus those little stubby 10 round magazines. I got to fish for them.
So before I started having hip and back problems, when I would carry my Glock 26, I would have 50 rounds on me, and it would go like this. So I would have a 15 round from a Glock 19 into my 26 and carrying one in the chambers. That gives me 16. And then I would have two 17 round mags on the other side. So 1 plus 15 plus 17 plus 17 equals 50.
Mm-hmm.
And that was quite doable. It wasn't cumbersome. I mean, I've got sort of a messed up back now, and so a substantial amount of weight on my hip gives me lower back problems, but I don't think it was the pistol and the ammo that caused it. I think that was arthritis caused by things I did in my youth. So, yeah, it's very, very easy to carry 50 rounds of 9mm.
Yeah, that's amazing. 50 rounds at 9mm. That will cover a lot of scenarios. Actually, Aaron, do you have any of the 33 round sticks for your Glock?
Do I? I have three of them.
How? I've never actually handled one. How cumbersome are they? Like, could you carry one of those on you, or is that officially when it starts getting into ridiculous?
Okay, well, I have actually tried this, and I have fit them into my belt carry. The problem is not the weight. The problem is that they stick up long enough that they bump into my rib cage and they chafe a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But in terms of weight, no, it's not a problem at all.
But yeah, I'm going by in terms of footprint.
Oh God. Oh. I didn't even try to conceal it.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure that would really, really stick out unless you were wearing like something super, super loose, like a muumuu, or maybe if you had a loose cover garment like an unbuttoned Hawaiian shirt over a t-shirt, that might work, you know, or the photographer's vests, that might work, but. That's really too much. I've even got a 27 round that I picked up, and that one's a bit too tall. So I think that somewhere between 20 and 25 is actually the most you could have before it starts to get cumbersome and not weight cumbersome, but awkward in terms of your mobility and showing through.
Mm-hmm. Well. So the only clear answer to this is Aaron Paulette's tactical muumuus. I think we could make a mint, Aaron, because let's face it, we're all looking a little bit more muumuu ready after this COVID lockdown.
Oh my God. Is there anyone out there who hasn't gained weight? I have to wonder. I mean, I'm sure that there are the theoretical people who have used this time to get in shape and write a novel and do all that other good stuff. But I think most of us have just, you know, well, we've caught up on our Netflix and we've snacked like crazy and we've got all sorts of bad habits and 10 to 20 extra pounds.
Yeah. Yeah. I've got to say that there's definitely probably been some people that, I mean, I know my wife points out the fact that my wife's actually has lost weight over this just because now she has more time to work out because she's having less late nights in the office and things like that, because she could literally just say, yeah, I'll get back to you in 20 minutes. I'm going to go do a workout and then I'll come back and then we can have this meeting. Cause literally my gym is upstairs from my office. And so versus having to commute and all that, but yeah, no, I'm ruined. I am such a mess. I look forward to starting to work out again because I am definitely not only feeling the weight around my waist, but also I'm achy. I need to work back out some more. But again, either way, we can cover it all up with a tactical muumuu by Aaron Paulette. But yeah, again, Matt's totally right. Oh, by the way, the Geeks, Gadgets, and Guns released a podcast where he goes on in more detail and longer rants on this as well. But this is definitely the much more succinct one. But again, yeah, they're all trying to compete with each other on capacity, and it's just their hearts in the right place, but they're really misleading people, and they should know better. They should be bragging about the fact that they have bigger magazines available on launch. Because that was one of the things when like Locke came out with like the 42 and 43 is one of those like, okay, cool. They're new little teeny tiny Glocks. But like, Aaron, when you got your Glock 26, like you had a multitude of Glock 17 and Glock 19 mags that fit it. Like,
and that's exactly why I got it.
Exactly. And you know, the same thing goes with the standard M&Ps is the full size ones go for all that. And you can immediately just, upgrade your compact to the full size mags and ta-da, you've got more mag capacity. But then when they came out with a shield, it was the, okay, you've got this magazine. And I'm trying to remember if the launch shields, the extended magazine that came with the gun held, I think it did hold like one or two more rounds. But it's one of those things but why not make some big ones? Because again, you could carry some fairly substantial magazines on your person without there being an issue on concealing it or weight or cumbersomeness. So yeah, good on you for making the extended magazine. Bad on you to pretend like that's what the flush fit holds, because that's not going to be you're not going to be carrying around a 13+1 Smith & Wesson shield. You're going to be carrying a 10+1 Smith & Wesson shield with maybe a 13 round magazine in your pocket. Thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibers podcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump.
Also, please remember to rate us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe to us on the platform of your choice, and share the show with your friends both online and off.
You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com. And hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
Does anyone ever listen to this? Really? All right, you know where to find me.
Comment in the Facebook group if you listen to this, because we got to work on that if they don't.
Yeah.
And thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
Yeah, I've got nothing, but I'm sure that as soon as I finish talking, he's going to laugh and tell me that it's brilliant, because apparently, according to Weird Beard, my farts smell like warm apple pie. So our senses of taste are greatly assorted, and so is our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night. I smell warm apple pie. That means I don't have the Rona.
Okay.